You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. In our current understanding of the origins of the cosmos, the light of everything that exploded from not quite nothing is the light that became the maybe everything of which we are a part. This little light we now kindle will become a light for each of us to carry forth in our hearts and minds as we find our way through the shadows on our path. Let us be grateful for the light in our lives, even as we honor the dark from which it came. Well, good morning and welcome to our service of worship. It is a service because it means to serve you, and it is worship because it means to serve you by raising to worth things that matter. My name is Rob McPherson, the minister of this church, and I welcome you on behalf of generations of Unitarians who have worshiped in similar gatherings in South Australia since 1854. We are a spiritual community that encourages and supports all who come to find, to fashion, and most importantly, to follow their own spiritual path. Any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all. You are, of course, invited to kick on with us after the service for coffee, tea, and conversation. We'll begin today by joining voices to sing our opening hymn, "So Simple is the Human Heart." Please stand as you're able. Margaret wanted me to tell you that all of the selections today are by Brahms. I'll be honest with you, I've had a really tough couple of weeks. So I offer this to people who occasionally struggle, today's reflection. Getting some broader perspective on yourself and how you fit into the bigger picture of things can be really helpful, I find, in dealing with the daily round of cares and concerns we all find ourselves enmeshed in from time to time. A broader perspective afforded by, I don't know, nature perhaps. Going out into nature, cycles of light and dark, sun and rain, a little sun, a little rain, far horizons expanding away. Sensing yourself upon this old, old earth and knowing how it calls all life back to itself. 10,000 years and more have dawned and fled, and still the magic is the same. For we too will come and go. Each thing in its season, as we turn, 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 and tilt toward and away from the great light of our nearest star. Our nearest star is our one source of life as much as we understand what living means. It's only one star, of course. Have you spent any time these clear nights looking up and out into the vast fields of other more distant stars in what we used to call the heavens? I do that sometimes. And as educated people, you would know, of course, that when you do look up and out at the night sky, you're not really looking at these distant stars as they are. You're seeing them as they were, however many millions of years that its light began its long journey to your retina. To look up and out at the night sky is to look back further in time than our minds can even imagine. So, what's my one little life in the context of all that? Something way bigger is going on than just our little lives, and we are part of whatever that is, doing whatever it is it's doing. Because neither matter nor energy can be lost, we always were a part of it, and ever shall be, world without end. So how's that for perspective? People who tell you that science and religion are fundamentally incompatible are profoundly mistaken about one or the other or both. Usually both, in my experience. Not mistaken so much as trapped by a too narrow perspective. Science, at its leading edges, clearly acknowledges the deep mystery of the nature of things. And if you don't believe me, go out and find me one book, one single book on quantum mechanics or string theory or dark matter or the uncertainty principle. Go find me one single book that doesn't include a frank admission of that scientist's near total bewilderment at what they're discovering. How can light be both a wave and a particle? How can the action of an object at one side of the universe have a measurable simultaneous effect on an object at the other side? How can it be that 96% of the cosmos is missing? It's what we call dark matter. It's detectable but not observable. How can an apparently solid object be so full of space between its atoms? And those atoms themselves, so full of space, 99.99999% of an atom is empty space. Remove all of the space from all of the atoms of all 7 billion of us, and you would get matter the size of a sugar cube. And so on down the subatomic scale until all that we can detect is there is no such thing as solid matter, but only energy. Energy. Whatever that is. The really smart people do not know, cannot say, and so they approach the subject of their study with the greatest humility. The light of any of our knowledge shines only against the great darkness of unknowing that frames it. Likewise, any religious perspective that flat out denies things scientifically demonstrable also lacks humility. To say, for example, that a personal God, who must be up there somewhere if only the Hubble telescope could locate him, made all this in 6 days. Or that the dead can rise up bodily from the grave. Or that complex life did not evolve from lower forms of life. Those things are every bit as boneheaded as a scientist saying, "We know all there is to know." Something no true scientist would ever admit. People are never so tragically stupid as when they're arrogant, when they know they've not got the full perspective, but dig in and try to brazen theirs out. Just as the problem with much of religion is blind belief in the patently false, the problem with science is scientism, which is a kind of fundamentalist blind faith which says only that which is observable and measurable exists or has any meaning. In fact, this is not science. Scientism is not science at all. It is actually a construct called logical positivism. Thanks to a small yet shrill group of popularists, scientism was for a while the new orthodoxy. And anybody suggesting that anything not observable or measurable had any meaning were very publicly mocked and shouted down. logical positivism, to be fair to it, has, since the time of Democritus, been a refreshing and useful attack on patent nonsense. But just as in any war on anything, it's easy to become as intolerant as the thing you loathe. Because after about a generation of scientism's narrow perspective, people are remembering again that none of the things which give our lives meaning are observable or measurable. Justice, contentment, I mean love, for God's sake, is not observable or measurable, and yet is real and meaningful. But if I kiss my wife, all that's observable is two pairs of lips touching. If I sigh in contentment, all that's measurable is an exhalation of CO2. Should we not strive for love or justice or contentment because we can't see abstractions? No. Feelings are real. They exist. And when we sing this next hymn, and its meaning resonates with us emotionally, these emotions that we feel really exist and really do have meaning. This hymn is so good that we might even sing it twice. Spirit of Life. Please stand as you're able. Let it fill your soul. Progressive religions like Unitarianism rejects an either-or approach to life in the world in favor of a both-and approach, both reason and feeling. Both logic and imagination, both the visible and the invisible. Ours is a theology of radical inclusion. Essentially, it's pluralism. Pluralism recognizes that there are always going to be diverse perspectives on the world. This is the famous five blind men and the elephant. But pluralism also seeks not just difference, but common ground and a shared constructive purpose. Well, so maybe it's no wonder people find it hard to pin Unitarians down. But this theological pluralism is not our sole possession, and it is not new. This next reading is not by a Unitarian, and when I tell you afterwards who wrote it, it might shock you a little. And maybe suggests what we know and what we don't yet know and what we may never know can indeed be held gently together in a way that provides a broader, more inclusive, and thus truer perspective, which may affirm our lives and direct our living. Not by coincidence, this was a reading I gave at Julie House's interment when we laid her to rest at Shady Grove.
Compared to the great vastness of the cosmos, the ocean of deep time, individual existence is a blip, a bubble in the foam on the surface of a flowing river. We are a momentary arrangement of atoms and molecules, an arrangement that lives and moves, to be sure, an arrangement that thinks, laughs, appreciates beauty, dreams, and loves. But a mere arrangement nonetheless, a transient state, an ephemeral gathering. Soon the blip will go out, the bubble will pop, the arrangement will dissolve, molecular bonds released by entropy. Consciousness will cease, but the molecules that once were you will still exist. The atoms that made up your body, iron, carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, all the heavy elements forged in the crucibles of dying stars, will remain. Liberated from their temporary home, they will rejoin the rest of the planet, taking new shapes, finding new arrangements, becoming part of other life. You will become merged with everything. You will become part of the trees that grow wherever your ashes are scattered, joining the ecosystem of the forest. You'll be in the slow green heartwood of the trunks as they patiently tick off the centuries, in the buds that burst forth in the spring, and in the leaves that explode with colour in the autumn. You'll be the sparkle of sunlight on the surface of a flowing mountain stream. You'll sink into the earth and mix with the groundwater, eventually flowing back and rejoining the ocean where all life on this planet ultimately began. You will be in the waves that crash on the shore, in the warm, sheltered tidal pools, in the coral reefs that bloom with life, and in the depths that echo with whale songs. You will be subducted into the planet's core and join the 300 million year cycle of the continental plates. You'll rise into the sky and in the fullness of time become dispersed throughout the atmosphere until every breath will contain part of you. And billions of years from now, when our sun swells and blasts the Earth's atmosphere away, you'll be there, streaming into space to rejoin the stars that gave you your atoms birth. And perhaps someday, billions of years yet beyond that, on some distant planet beneath bright alien skies, an atom that was once part of you will take part in a series of chemical reactions that may ultimately lead to new life. Life that will in time leave the sea it gave birth, crawl up onto the beach and look up into the cosmos and wonder where it came from. And the cycle will begin again.
Well, that reading, just to remove your suspense, was written by this man, Father George Coyne, Jesuit, retired Vatican astronomer. Well, not so much retired as encouraged to take early retirement by Pope Benedict, hopefully the last of the old hindbound hardline popes. Why was he encouraged to take early retirement? By rejecting intelligent design in favor of evolution, and generally being tireless in his efforts to bridge the gap between religion and science. And as his reading has just shown you, there is no real gap between these two perspectives. There is only a humility gap over who holds the key to the ultimate truth and meaning of our lives. I sent Father George Coyne a membership form, but I haven't heard back yet. Both the perspectives of religion and science have begun to find important common ground on one important area, that is the sacredness of human life. It's something to do with what we have figured out about the stars. Perhaps you've heard of the Fermi paradox. In the 1960s, the astrophysicist Enrico Fermi, the astrophysicist at Los Alamos Observatory, asked a simple question born out of complex science. This question: where is everybody else looking up at the heavens? He noticed the apparent contradiction between the lack of evidence of other civilized life in the universe and the high mathematical probability for the existence of such life. I mean, Fermi reasoned that even if life is extremely rare, you'd still expect there to be many alien civilizations just given the sheer size of the universe. What sort of sheer size are we talking about? Well, Fermi estimates, in the best estimate, so that there are 1 septillion, that's this many, stars in the known universe, many of which are surrounded by planets that could probably support life. So where are they? Why aren't they talking to us? The Fermi paradox is based on the Drake equation, which was devised to estimate the number of detectable civilizations just in the Milky Way. There should be 50 million. So where are they? Now, all this science by Drake and Fermi is half a century old, and happily, science, unlike most religion, is inherently progressive. That is, it seeks to improve upon itself. A new paper from scientists at the Future of Humanity Institute at Oxford University, so not dummies, has updated the Drake equation, incorporating newer models of uncertainty and the chemical and genetic transitions needed for life to begin and evolve. Researchers have said that this new Drake equation finally solves the Fermi paradox of where the hell everybody is. The solution is either inspiring or dispiriting, depending on your perspective, because the Oxford data shows that there is up... Well, I'll just drum roll, please. The latest scientific research says something that religion has always said we are, that there is up to an 85% probability that humans are alone in the universe. I'll say that again. The latest data shows that there is up to an 85% chance that humans are alone in the universe. Such odds are generally called compelling. It suggests that as far as we are able to determine, humanity is most likely the one conscious life form in the infinite, fathomless cosmos. It's just us. We're it. I'll just leave that there. Wait, no, I won't. As I say, it comes down to which perspective you choose to take. One, we're alone and therefore nothing we do matters ultimately. Or two, we are unique and aware of it, and therefore what we do matters profoundly. Guess which of those two perspectives will bless your life and the life of those around you. So if science affirms that human life is indeed incredibly rare and precious, as it now seems, if it tells us that we are made of star matter, which we know we are, if it tells us that our star matter is going back to these stars, which we know it must, if we are the one part of the cosmos that has become aware of itself and can create our own purpose as we know we can, then how far, really, are we from affirming something deeply religious, that we are an incarnation, fully human and fully universal, both, made of the living universal stuff arranged into flesh and blood for a little while? Alan Watts put it like this: just as a wave is something the whole ocean is doing, you are something the whole universe has conspired to be doing. And if we were to take the preciousness of our human living seriously, really seriously for what it is, so very, very rare, if we were to take that seriously, could we not affirm with all our being that each and every human being, so unlikely, so very, very rare, and yet made of the same common stuff as everything else, has an undeniable, irrefutable, and inherent worth and dignity, that in a full faith, born of knowing real science, we ought to cherish and nurture human life ourselves, just as a loving creator might do. This cherishing and nurturing of life is what the Greeks called agape love, divine love, the love that transcends the finite self. And that love doesn't stop at nurturing. We may also cherish life by confronting and challenging anything which does not value humanity's inherent preciousness. And if we do that, we will be in great company with all the saints and sages that ever were or ever will be, who put an active and practical love of our humanity above even their own one and only human life. Jesus, Gandhi, Mandela, Trump, you, me, we're all dust in the end. But that dust never ends and has traveled far and wide and will travel far and wide. Each of us is a little vessel of the universe, conscious of itself, coming from mystery, going back to mystery, stardust to stardust. You are, in fact, a kind of starship made of flesh and free choices. Which way will you go? Toward the light or into the dark? It all depends on the perspective you choose to take. And as I said at the start, sometime sitting in nature, sensing the earth and yourself upon it, or looking up at the night sky, can help us see ourselves and our cares and woes and our once in an eternity life in the right perspective, a perspective where both science and religion travel together forever in peace. Amen.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitariansa@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.